Sfarno Parshas Lech Lecha. I want to take a look tonight at various comments that the Sfarno has on Perek Tes Zayin in Sefer Bereishis, which is the story of Avraham Avinu taking Hagar and the birth of Yishmael, the interaction between Sarah and Hagar that leads to Hagar running away. Again, there are various points in the whole story that the Sforno has a particular unique perspective, and we'll lay that out tonight. We know that the Torah tells us, beginning at the Perek Tezayin, the Sarai Eishes Avram lo yoldolo, Sarai had not had a child, v'lo shivcho mitzvis u'shma Hagar. Sarai had a Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. Batomer Sarai el Avram. So Sarai said to Avram, Hinei noat sorani Hashem iledes. You see how Hashem has prevented me from giving birth. Bo no el shivchasi. So you, Avram Avinu, please, I'm asking you, enter into a relationship with my maidservant. Ulai ibone mimena. Perhaps I will be built mimena from her. So the first part of what Sarah asks Avraham Avinu to do is more readily understandable. She says to Avraham Avinu, look, it doesn't seem to be working out to have a child with me. Create a relationship with Hagar, perhaps you'll have a child through her. But the last three words, ulai ibone mimena, perhaps I will be built through her, are not readily understood. How is Sarah going to be built up in any way whatsoever if Avraham Avinu and Hagar have a child together? So one way perhaps to interpret it is that although the child biologically will be Hagar's child, to the extent to which Hagar is the shivcha, she's the handmaiden of Sarah Imenu, and to the extent to which Sarah Imenu is voluntarily asking Avraham Avinu to have a child through Hagar, in some kind of spiritual sense, the child will be considered to be Sarah's. Right? It's not biologically Sarah's child, but okay, it's in a broad sense, because Sarah's involved in the shidduch, so to speak, it's going to be her child. It's one way to understand it. Rashi gives a different interpretation. Rashi writes, Ulai ibone mimeno. Bischus sha'achnis tsarasi l'soch beisi. Rashi quotes from the Medrash that Sarah Imenu was actually saying as follows. It's a very, very difficult test for me to have Avraham Avinu marry another woman, to get involved with another woman. It certainly pained Sarah in that sense. So perhaps in the merit of doing something which is difficult, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will subsequently bless me with a child. So the way Rashi is explaining what Sarah is saying is not that Sarah is saying the child who will be given to Hagar in some way is going to be counted as my child. No, you'll have a relationship with Hagar, you'll have a child with Hagar, but then because of that relationship, because of the Mesiras Nefesh, the fact that I'm suffering through the creation of that relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bless me with a child, a second child, a child, you know, distinct from the child you're going to have with Hagar. But the catalyst for HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving me that child is going to be the fact that I was Moser Nefesh, that I allowed Avraham Avinu to take another woman and to have a relationship with her. The Sfarno offers an explanation that is in some ways similar to Rashi, but goes even an extra step beyond that. The Sfarno writes, Ulai ibone mimena, ulai kinas hayorech, te'orer hakorach lufu'ulosov, v'yischazek lahasig zera. Rashi had written that when Avraham Avinu would marry Hagar and have a child through her, So in a spiritual sense, the fact that Sarah Imenu had allowed such a thing to take place would cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bless her, to create a miracle, and to grant Sarah a child, which, by the way, we know is ultimately what ended up happening. The Sfarno says that a very similar phenomena, but one that could be explained in a physical sense, not simply in a spiritual sense. Says the Sfarno, Sarah Imenu says to Avraham Avinu as follows, I will be jealous, naturally, to have another woman be brought into Avraham Avinu's life, that he refers to as kinas hayorech, the jealousy, so to speak, that attaches itself to the thigh, the jealousy of reproduction, that I'm jealous that this other woman is able to reproduce, to give a child to Avraham Avinu, and I'm not able to. The very jealousy of reproduction will trigger something biologically and might stimulate those biological forces within my own body, says Sarah Imenu, such that I will then be able to have a child. So this is sort of like Rashi and the Bereishis Rabbah that Rashi quotes, but not quite, not exactly. As Rashi is saying, Sarah Imenu is going to say, I'm going to be blessed with a child, I'm going to be blessed with a child, in a spiritual sense. The Sfarno is saying, I'm going to become capable of having a child, not just in a spiritual sense, but in a physical sense. HaKadosh Baruch, you know, the phenomena of having another woman in the house is going to impact on me physically. And the longing that I have for a child, the jealousy that I have, is going to stimulate myself such that I'll be able to have a child after that. Very, very interesting pshat that the Sfarno suggests. Okay, so that's one interesting pshat the Sfarno has. We then continue. So Avram marries Hagar. Vayavo el Hagar vatahar. And Hagar becomes pregnant right away. So Hagar saw that she had become pregnant, and in some level she lost respect for her mistress, for Sarah. So Sarah complains to Avram Avinu, you know, look what happened, she no longer has respect for me. So Avram says to Sarah, behold, I am giving over your maidservant into your hands. You know, what happens next is up to you. Asila hatov be'inoyuch. Whatever is good in your eyes, do to her. Treat her as you will. Vate'aneho sorai. So sorai was me'aneher. We'll translate that word in just a moment. Vativrach miponeho. And Hagar ran away from Sarah on account of the inui that she experienced. So what's vate'aneha? She was ma'anehar, there was inoy. What exactly is the translation of that word? So one way to translate vate'aneha is that she tortured her. Again, it's hard to imagine Sarah Imenu torturing Hagar like a medieval torture chamber or something like that. But she made her life very, very miserable. I mean, after all, that very same word, you know, of that vate'aneho, inui, was used shortly before in the parasha to describe what the Mitzriim were going to do to the Jews. The inu osom, arba meos shana, for 400 years, the Egyptians are going to be me'ane, the Jewish people. So in other words, it carries with it a very, very negative connotation that Sarah Imenu basically made life miserable for Hagar. And she made life miserable for Hagar to the point that she ran away. If that is indeed the translation of the word vate'aneha, it arguably does not reflect so well on Sarah Imenu. So one of the great Rishonim, who said that taka, that seems to be the translation, and indeed it does seem to reflect poorly on Sarah Imenu, is the Ramban. So the Ramban famously, on this pasuk, in this perek, says, Chata Imenu be'inui zeh, that's his lashon. Our mother Sarah sinned through this inui, through this torture that she subjected Hagar to, and says, continues the Ramban, and Avraham Avinu is also not off the hook, because basically Avraham Avinu gave the green light to Sarah to engage in that kind of torture. Do whatever you want to her. So the Ramban comments that if the Bnei Yishmael, the descendants of Yishmael who's going to be born to Hagar, are constantly a thorn in the side of the Jewish people, perhaps we have this to blame. The fact that Sarah acted inappropriately towards Hagar, the fact that Avraham Avinu gave her license to act inappropriately towards Hagar, all of that seems to be a contributing factor, says the Ramban, to what we suffer to this day, that the Yishmaelim, the descendants of Yishmael, are giving the Jewish people a hard time. Yeah, so the Ramban, again, on some level, is certainly being critical of Avram and Sarah for what happened here with Hagar. As we've spoken about a number of times already, the Svarno, in general, is extremely loath to criticize the Avos and the Imahos even slightly, right? Again, it's just to emphasize this point. Clearly, every Rishon sees the Avos and the Imahos as towering figures of tremendous tzidkus, of tremendous righteousness. The question just is, you know, is there room on some level to point out, you know, any things in which they might have been deficient on some level? The Ramban clearly held that was appropriate. Again, on some level, you know, the Ramban is not throwing, as they say today, is not throwing Avraham and Sarah under the bus by any stretch of the imagination. But he's saying, look, you know, in a life that was filled up with tremendous tzidkus, you know, here's something that, you know, could have been done better, you know, from their perspective. The Svarno always avoids saying things like that. For the Svarno, if the Torah tells us something about the Avos and the Imahos, even if on the surface it seems to be not so great, you have to look a little bit deeper and understand it in an appropriate way. So how do you understand this story of the Inui, the torture, quote-unquote, that Sarah is subjecting Hagar to? So writes the Svarno on Pasuk Vav, first of all, Hinei Shivchasech Biyodech. Right? So Avraham Avinu says, behold, your maidservant is given over to your hands. What does that mean? On some level, it sounds like Avraham Avinu is saying, I wash my hands of the whole thing. It's up to you, Sarah. Whatever you want to do is great. The Svarno explains those words somewhat differently. She'eino meshuchreres mimech. In a very technical sense, understand that Hagar has not become a freed woman. Why would I think that she became a freed woman? Well, because she married Avraham Avinu. So as you might think that once she marries Avraham Avinu, Sarah has no claim over her whatsoever. She used to be the Shivcha. She used to be the maidservant of Sarah. But now she got a promotion. Now she's the wife of Avraham Avinu. So now Sarah, you know, has no dominion over her whatsoever. So comes Avraham Avinu, he says to Sarah, first off, you should realize that Hagar is still under your dominion, right? Shivchaseich biyadeich, she's still your shivcha. Vate'aneha Sarai, continues the pasuk, so says the Svarno, so Sarai afflicted her, Sarah tortured her. Kedei shetakir shehi meshubedes. Whatever Sarah did, it was with the intent that Hagar should recognize her status. She may be the wife of Avraham Avinu, but at the same time, she's still the Shivcha. She's still the maidservant of Sarah. V'lo tivaze od es gevirta. And no longer will she continue in what she was doing before, what the Pasuk describes, v'tekal gevirta be'eneha, that Hagar began to look down upon Sarah. Basically, says the Svarno, Sarah just put Hagar in her place, and, you know, that was the extent of it. It was important for Hagar to be reminded of the fact that she was still the mistress of Sarah, and that's what's going on with Vate'aneha Sarai. I think one can suggest that according to the Svarno, the translation of inui is not necessarily torture or afflict, but simply discipline. And inui can have that connotation as well. It's a much lighter connotation than afflicting or torturing. Torturing means you beat somebody up. Disciplining just means, you know, I'm going to put you in your place that you should understand that what you did before was inappropriate. So I think that's the way the Sfarno understands the expression. Vate'aneha sarai disciplined Hagar. It's a very, very different picture than Hagar afflicted, than Sarah afflicted Hagar, that Sarah tortured Hagar. And as a result, the statement of the Ramban, chato imenu, is simply not on target, according to the Sfarno, because whatever Avram and Sarah did was justified, it was appropriate to remind Hagar of her status, and the way in which it was done was not over the top, it was discipline as opposed to torture. The Sfarno then adds the following, La'os shekein yikre l'chol mevazeh Yisrael. As the Sfarno mentioned in his introduction, the Sfarno accepts very much the position of the Ramban that Maisa Avos Simon Labonim, that whatever is told to us about the Avos and the Imos in Chumash is supposed to foreshadow what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael at later points in history. Right? So, whereas the Sfarno seems to disagree with the Ramban about the specifics of the story of Hagar and Sarah, he agrees with the Ramban in the big picture that when we read stories about the Avos and the Imos, they have far-reaching consequences in terms of what's going to play out in the history of Klal Yisrael. So what do we learn from this story, says the Sfarno? This story is foreshadowing later Jewish history. If someone is Mevaza Yisrael, if somebody makes light or denigrates the Jewish people, so they will be disciplined and put in their place. The story of the relationship between Hagar and Sarah is supposed to be representative of the relationship between the Jewish people and other nations in the world, says the Sfarno. Ka'amro, as the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, we read it as the Haftarah for Parshas Kisavo, V'shtachavu al kapos raglayich kol mena'atsoyich. In the future, all of those nations that degraded the Jewish people will come and they're going to bow down at your feet. That's the Pasuk says in Yeshaya. So, you know, this story between Sarah and Hagar, not only is Sarah not criticized for what she did, but Sarah's actions, according to the Sfarno, are indicative of what's going to happen later on in history in a good sense. In other words, that's going to be, you know, foreshadowing the fact that those nations that were anti-Semitic and tried to put down the Jewish people are ultimately themselves going to have to recognize and acknowledge the greatness of Klal Yisrael. So Hagar runs away. Let me actually, before you just talk about that for a moment, there is a very fascinating half-line in the Sfarno towards the end of the Perek. Where in Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Pasuk says that Hagar had run away to the desert. Vatikro Shem Hashem Hadover Eleha Ata El Roi. She called the name of Hashem who was speaking to her. You are the God of vision. Ki Amra, she said, Hagam Halom Roisi Achare Roi. She said, I saw these here even after seeing them. What does that mean? So if we have time, we'll come back and talk about the first part of the Pasuk, but in terms of the second part of the Pasuk, where she used the phrase Ata El Roi, so explains the Sfarno there in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ata Kel Shol Re'iyo B'chol Makom. You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, see what's going on in every place. You can be seen in every place. Lo Beveso Shel Avram Bilvod. Not only in the house of Avram Avinu can you be seen and interacted with, but you can be experienced all over the place. In other words, as Rashi says, and the Sfarno clearly is building on this, Hagar was used to seeing Malachim in the house of Avram Avinu. It was a holy place. But it startled her a little bit to know that in the middle of the desert, far away from the house of Avram Avinu, you could still see Malachim. So that's what she said. Atah El Roi, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can be interacted with through your malachim in many, many places, even outside of the house of Avraham Avinu. And then the Sforno adds the following. Ka'omram zichrono livracha. As Chazal say, he quotes the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Dafna Tesam at Aleph, Kol hasha'arim ninalu, chutz misha'arei ona'a. All of the gates of heaven could potentially be closed except for the gates of someone who is insulted and downgraded. Someone who's denigrated. That's one of someone who's insulted verbally. Onas devarim means that you make fun of the person. You make them feel bad. All of the gates in heaven can be shut, but if a person has been made to feel bad, so that phenomena of being a victim can open up gates in heaven which otherwise would have been closed to the person. Why is the Sforno quoting this? What does this have to do with anything? So the Sforno seems to be quoting this in the following context. Indeed, why did Hagar see Malachim outside of the house of Avraham Avinu? You know, I understand why she saw Malachim in the house of Avraham Avinu. They were there in the schus, they were there in the merit of Avraham. Okay, I get that. But, you know, Hagar wasn't on the level of Avraham Avinu. How is it that Hagar was able to see and interact and speak with and get, you know, predictions from these Malachim, you know, far, far away from the house of Avraham Avinu? So the Sforno essentially says, you're right, she really wasn't so deserving. But you know what enabled her to have these incredible experiences where she saw Malachim? She was the victim of Ona'a. She had been dismissed. She had been made to feel bad. And when a person feels bad, that opens up spiritual opportunities that they otherwise would not have had. So first of all, it's a very powerful idea in its own right. You know, next time somebody makes fun of us, next time somebody, you know, calls us a nasty name or something like that, you have to remember, you know, huh, okay, the Shari Shamayim are opening up as a result of this insult that I suffered at the hands of somebody else. Maybe, you know, if you internalize that idea, you'll be running around asking for people to insult you because you want the Shari Shamayim to be able to open up for you. You know, perhaps that would be the case. But that's one point that the Sforno is bringing out. A second point, though, that the Sforno is bringing out is that Hagar was a victim of Ona'a. I mean, that's implicit in the Sforno's words. Since she was a victim of Ona'a, since she was a victim of being made fun of or treated badly or, you know, left with bruised feelings, so for that reason, the Shari Shamayim opened up, the gates of heaven opened up, and she was able to experience Malachim that otherwise she would not have been able to experience. So how does that fit together with what we just saw from the Sforno in the earlier part of the parak? The Sforno justified the behavior of Avraham and Sarah towards Hagar. Again, the Sforno is different than the Ramban in this regard. The Ramban said, Chato imeinu bi'inu izeh. The Sforno seems to justify what Avraham and Sarah did. So if they were justified in what they did, how is it that Hagar is considered to be a victim of Ona'a? You can't have it both ways. If, you know, if Avraham and Sarah were right, then Hagar was right. So everybody's right. How does that work exactly? So I think, perhaps, what the Sforno is saying over here is as follows. It's true that Avraham and Sarah were justified in their actions. But lemaisa, bottom line, Hagar felt insulted. And the fact that somebody feels insulted and the fact that somebody feels victimized gives them a certain leg up in Shamayim, even if the one who hurt them or victimized them was entirely justified. Right? In other words, it's not this. You can be a victim even if the perpetrator, so to speak, of the Ona'a was totally justified for what they did. We'll give an example of this idea. Another famous Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about how the Sanhedrin, led by Rabban Gamliel, excommunicated the Tana Rebbe Lezer because of a certain halachic position that he took, and he failed to bend to the will of the other Chachamim who paskened the other way. You know, he maintained his position even though the rest of the Sanhedrin had paskened in a certain way. So the Gemara says that the wife of Rabban Gamliel was the sister of Rabbi Eliezer, and she was deathly. The wife of Rabbi Eliezer was the sister of Rabban Gamliel, and she was deathly afraid that Rabbi Eliezer would daven, and it would lead to the death of Rabban Gamliel in some way. And the Gemara goes on to tell the story that despite whatever precaution she took, one day Rabbi Eliezer let out his pain and frustration when he said Tachnun, and Taka Rabban Gamliel suffered, as a result of Rabbi Eliezer's tefilos. So was Rabban Gamliel justified in excommunicating Rabbi Eliezer? The impression you have from the story is that yes, he was right. You're supposed to listen to the rest of the Sanhedrin. So how come Rabban Gamliel was then punished because of the tefilos of Rabbi Eliezer? So the answer seems to be, Rabban Gamliel was right, but Rabbi Eliezer was still hurt. And if you're hurt, that's still meaningful, even if the person who perpetrated the hurt was totally justified in what they did. That would seem to be the hesber, the explanation, in the Sfarno over here as well. Avram and Sarah were totally justified in the way they act towards Hagar. But Lemaisa, she was hurt. So if she was hurt, that opened up the Shari Shamayim to enable the Malachim to see and interact with Hagar and have that conversation with her. Okay?